Democrats walk out and a judge says fines can't be taken out of their pay. What happens now? A lawmaker plans to resign, citing partisan warfare. TV ads start in the Senate race. Mike Pence sets a fundraising record, and Mitch Daniels will give the State of the Union response. That plus Super Bowl preparations and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 20, 2012.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the right-to-work battle in the Indiana General Assembly produced another walkout by the Democrats. And after Republicans voted to impose fines on the missing representatives, a judge said the money can't be deducted from paychecks. Wednesday, those Democrats met in the State House Rotunda, surrounded by union protesters rather than report to the House floor. They conducted something of a pep rally, repeating their demand that action on the right-to-work bill be delayed as they seek ways to conduct a statewide referendum on the issue. Five Democrats appeared on the House floor, three short of the number required for a quorum. Republicans voted for $1,000 a day fines as the House Speaker continues to say that Democrats broke a pledge to take part in floor action.
The question is whether someone should show up for work they're getting paid to do, and I'd say that answer is an unequivocal yes for everyone in the state, apparently except for 35 Democrat legislators.
It really goes way beyond what you have the power to do as any employer, let alone a public employer.
And that's Minority Leader Pat Bauer talking about the fines. How does this standoff end? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor for the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shello. Mike McDaniel, without the ability to fine, are the hands of the Republicans tied?
Well, first of all, they still have the ability to fine.
They still have, they may not have the ability to collect.
The judge didn't rule that they couldn't fine them.
Right.
He just ruled that the way they were going to take the money out would have to be put on hold until a hearing took place. And so he didn't say they couldn't be fined. And I think the fines have had an effect because the Democrats have announced that they are going to come back to the floor on Monday. And I think that does affect a lot of those folks because that's a lot of money when you start adding it up at $1,000 a day. But, you know, this is something that the Democrats have a problem because they have no exit strategy for this. And even Democrats are saying to me, you know, our problem is we're not sure how we're going to get out of this at this point. And the longer they drag it on, the worse it's getting internally for their own caucus. And that's a problem. That's a problem for them. That's a problem for everybody in Indiana who thinks that they should be on the floor doing the job they were elected to do.
So Pat Bauer went on the floor today. Even while denying a quorum, he said that they plan to be back Monday and vote. He's gone back on previous plans. Will he stick to this one?
Well, I think it depends on what happens. You know, last time he thought they had an agreement with Brian Bosma to allow a vote on the referendum issue, and Brian Bosma went back on
He didn't go back. There was an opinion issued by the Legislative Services Agency saying that the amendment was unconstitutional.
I understand. It's also very easily fixed. Okay, and
you can now have a
referendum, and you can have the vote on it. I mean, you asked the original question.
But they had that today. Why didn't they vote on it today?
The original question you asked. If we can get back to the original question.
Will they come back Monday?
No. The first question was, how does this end? And I said, there are two ways for it to end. One is to have the Republicans withdraw it, which isn't going to happen. The other one is to have an up and down vote on the referendum. I mean, This has been as divisive as it possibly could be. As we've talked before, there is no reason for right to work, and people keep saying you're requiring people to be in the unions. It doesn't require people to be in the unions. All it requires them to do is to pay a fee for the union representation, which the union is required by law to provide for every employee, whether they're union members or not. It hasn't hurt economic development at all, and yet it's obviously the chamber's way to drive down wages.
So today there was a referendum amendment offered in the state Senate as they started moving a right-to-work bill, and it was defeated 14-36. Any reason to expect a different outcome in the House?
You know, I suspect that it will be defeated in the House, but that's hard to tell, really, because we don't have anything to go on. We don't have any history in this session to see how it's going to go. But it will be interesting to see how it's treated by the Republicans in the House, because a number of them have been supportive of the referendum movement that Indiana's been going on in the last 5 years, and for them to vote against this potential referendum could be seen as hypocritical by some.
But the only referenda we have seen have been on local questions. This is a statewide...
Or constitutional questions.
Or constitutional questions that have already been through the legislature on two different occasions. This is an attempt to do something that's never been done before, put a public policy question on the ballot for the public.
Yeah, it's really... The referendum question all by itself is a really interesting one, and one that we may be seeing more of in Indiana. We're not like California. We don't have these ways of putting questions on the ballot where citizens can petition to have things on the ballot. The General Assembly generally doesn't try to do it, although part of the reason they didn't is for a long time, Senator Bob Garton, who led the Senate for years, didn't like these kinds of things. It'll be interesting to see if there will be increasing pressure to have more of these kinds of questions in the future.
So in the meantime, the AFL-CIO this week came up with a video clip of the governor giving a speech in 2006 where he said that he's a supporter of Indiana's labor laws and that there's no reason to change laws, especially right to work. We had this discussion last week. He's made promises to labor organizations before. Clearly, he's changed his mind. But they're bringing these things out because they think they can get him to reverse again?
No, I think they want everybody to know that he broke his word, that he absolutely broke his word. What he said there, he knew what the situation was, okay? And now he's looking to be in Washington under some guise or other, and he wants to have more standing with the National Party, so he's tacking to the right just like the rest of his party is. And he doesn't care that he breaks his word in the bargain.
Does this end peaceably?
It ends because there actually will be a vote. Now, whether or not the Democrats stay after these amendments go down in flames on Monday, which I predict they will, whether they allow a third reading vote on it, that's the question. You know, they could decide that they're going to scuttle the whole session and never show up for a third reading. That's what, when the real rubber hits the road, we'll find out after that.
I'm starting to think that it might have been a mistake for the Republicans not to have connected right to work with something just a little bit more important, not more important than right to work, but something that voters in general would have gotten really excited about. Because right now, if the Democrats scuttled the session, there's not a lot going on that I think people would be really outraged
well,
to see.
Well, first of all, this session, you don't have to pass a budget, right? You know, there's nothing that really has to pass this session. So you could do it, and the only problem with that is that the money that was going to be put back into things like education and other things won't happen.
Well,
and
they haven't put that out on the table yet. They need to get that out on the table.
That's exactly what you're talking about. That's still out there for that very reason, because that's not going to happen unless this happens.
But see, this implies that there is a strategy going forward, and I think that they've gotten themselves into this big bog, and they can't figure out a way to get out of it because they don't have that kind of vision right now. It's too at loggerheads.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should missing lawmakers be forced to pay fines? Your choices are yes, no, or only if they are reasonable. Last week's question was, is the General Assembly more effective than Congress? 29% said yes, 18% said no, 53% said they are birds of a feather. To take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. If you think this session of the General Assembly is difficult to watch, Rest assured that it's also tough on some of the participants. The daily crowds of protesters combined with partisan pressures to make life difficult for lawmakers in the middle of the political spectrum. It's why David Cheatham of North Vernon announced this week that he is not seeking re-election after seven terms in the Indiana House. Cheatham opposes right to work, but refuses to take part in the Democratic walkout.
It's hard for someone who's a moderate to find a middle ground. Issues become more extreme, and it's just difficult to try to work through things. You know, we have people out there, they're all Hoosiers. We all should be working together. It affects everyone.
And Delaney, is that troubling?
Well, I think it is troubling. I mean, when you have people like Representative Jerry Torr saying there is no compromise, okay, well, the essence of legislation is compromise. And the problem with the radical right taking over the legislature and the Republican majorities is there is no compromise. It's their way or the highway. And that it's going to affect not simply moderate Democrats, but moderate Republicans are going to get out for the same reason. It's an intolerable situation, a lot like the House in Congress, the same way.
Well, I think both in Washington and here, you have problems on both sides with people who are unwilling to compromise.
Well, it's not only people unwilling to compromise, and a lot of that's based on principle. It's become so rancorous in how they go about doing the campaigns to go along with the way that the issues themselves are conducted in the process that everything is all or nothing. And there's this perception that every word that's spoken in the State House, the public's hanging on every word, which is just not the case.
Right.
And subsequently, everybody thinks that they have to be on point all the time and do all this stuff, where that doesn't leave much room for compromise. And subsequently, I think you're having people, and particularly in Dave Cheatham's case, who felt obligated to show up every day and do his job that he was elected to do, and he thinks that's the way it ought to be done. And I think he said that one of the reasons he's getting out is because you can't compromise on things anymore. And a lot of that's with his own folks.
Oh, and also with the Republicans.
Well,
a lot of it is with his own folks.
Dave Cheatham has said that his problem is with both parties.
Yeah.
The Democrats have shown up every day. They haven't gone on the floor, but they've shown up every day.
The fact is this session's exhausting. No matter what side you're on, this session's exhausting. The last session was exhausting. Frankly, the fact that they can't move forward on so many things, whoever is to blame for that, is exhausting for people. It's almost more tiring to have not enough to do than it is to have too much to do.
And nothing to show for it.
Well, I think that's one of the big frustrations, because still the motivation for a lot of these people is to be a part of the process and to be public servants for their constituents that elect them. But the reality is it's become power politics, and that's the driving motivation, as Mike indicated, for a lot of what goes on at the General Assembly. And until that changes, until you can have a sense that, you know, we, as Dave Cheatham said, there are 6.5 million Hoosiers. They expect to get the work done. They expect people to find reasonable solutions. And until we can get back to that, we're going to have this power politics ruling the situation and really ruining the process.
And you need to understand that every one of these legislators has pressure on them from people back home who want them to do certain things. Even though I said there's nothing that requires them to pass a budget or do any of this other stuff.
Sure.
Every one of them have almost filed the maximum 5 bills in the House and 10 in the Senate, which means that they have constituents that come to him that want to get things done. Well, if those things aren't getting done, every one of these members is feeling pressure from home about what they're not getting done.
Well, they can get them all done.
If the Democrats just show up and go to work on the back burner,
yeah. All of this could get done.
Moving on. Senator Richard Lugar plans to spend millions in his bid to win re-election, and his TV ads hit the air this week, months in advance of the May GOP primary. His new ad is designed to point out that he has opposed the president on a number of issues. Lugar faces a Tea Party challenge from State Treasurer Richard Murdoch, in part because conservatives think he's too moderate.
He's opposed President Obama on stimulus, overregulation, and every single Obamacare vote.
And it's going out and talking about the record, because there's been a lot of disinformation about Senator Lugar's voting record, what his stance has been on the issues, and this is one way to let those Republican primary voters know that.
Dick Lugar, no wonder he's called Obama's favorite Republican. Richard Murdoch, balance.
And that's an ad from Richard Murdoch that's running on cable channels during GOP presidential debates. John Ketzenberger, is the Lugar ad a good ad?
Well, I think it's a necessary ad for his campaign, because clearly the right wing of the Republican Party is being cater to in this election. This is the wing that's important, and I think that the perception among many in the Republican Party who are more conservative is exactly what he's addressing in that ad. So I think that for Senator Lugar, in order to win and survive this primary, he needs to do that.
He's got a lot more money than Murdoch, and the fact that he's buying network television at this point and Murdoch is buying a few ads on cable helps point that out. Does he have enough money?
I think he has enough money to get his message out. I'm not sure that if there's a true movement to have someone more conservative than Senator Lugar, that there's not enough money to defeat that. I mean, you can have a movement. We saw that in the mayor's race when Greg Ballard won. When there's money doesn't matter when there's a strong enough undercurrent for change.
You're talking about 2007. some former Lugar aides have formed a super PAC. Is that going to carry the negative message for the Lugar campaign?
I don't know what their message is going to be. I haven't heard that yet. But I got to believe that they have put this PAC together to put out a message, and they will. They'll raise a lot of money, and they'll do that job. As far as this particular Lugar ad is concerned, I think the strategy of this particular ad at this time is absolutely brilliant. And the reason I say that is because what they've done is taken an ad and made part of it about the XL project that the president now has said no to. They put it on before he made the decision.
Right.
They're running it some after at a time when people are talking about that decision that basically said, you know, forget the jobs, forget the oil independence, we're not going to do this now. And having that ad wrapped around that decision at a time when people are talking about it makes the ad more powerful. So I think the strategy of this ad was absolutely brilliant at this time early on in the process.
Well, it helps point out that Lugar does have differences with Barack Obama
sure,
that are real, that aren't just
that's
invented.
That's fine, and he can certainly point those out. But his bigger problem is he's been in public service for 50 years. For 50 years, he has been a publicly elected official. And if you're talking about being an engine for change, half a century by most term limit Republicans would be less than 50 years. And in terms of the oil pipeline, all the president said is we're going to look at the environmental consequences of that before we get rushed into doing something because you guys say drill, 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 and damn the consequences.
Campaign finance reports made public this week showed a disparity in the fundraising by candidates for governor. Republican Mike Pence claims a record year in 2011 with $5 million raised. He still has $3.7 million cash on hand. That's a sum that exceeds the fundraising of Democrat John Gregg by $2.5 million. Leslie Weidenbender, will money decide that race?
Well, money is a huge factor in this race because John Gregg has been out of politics for 10 years. He's got to get his name ID back up. Maybe it was never really even high enough to begin with to be running for governor. And money is what you have to spend to get your name ID where it needs to be. And he's got a long way to go.
You know, as time goes on, every race, it seems, becomes more expensive. But it is impressive that he raised more money than Mitch Daniels did in a similar circumstance.
That John Gregg did.
No, that Mike Pence raised Mike, more than Mitch Daniels did.
Mike Pence's fundraising is eye-popping. It's remarkable that at this point he's been able to raise that amount of money, and it really points up the point that if John Gregg can't get on somewhat of a similar track, he's really going to have a tough time in this campaign going forward.
John Gregg's reaction was to say that Mike Pence is going to need $2 million to get the stench of Congress off him.
Well, Pence's fundraising may be remarkable, but it's not surprising. He spent all this time in Washington catering to all those special interests, and when you're getting checks at the $200,000 a piece level, which is what he's going to be getting from every fat cat who's interested in any economic development issues in Indiana at all, it's not surprising. John Gregg has to run the kind of populist campaign which points that out, that Mike Pence will go to the highest bidder. That's what it is. It's pay to play from beginning to end.
I love that. That is absolutely hilarious. Adage is true in politics more times than not, that fundraising is a good barometer of a candidate's worth. We've said that 1,000 times. And it's true. And there's a reason it's true. Of the money that was raised, first of all, to have him raise more than Mitch Daniels raised is phenomenal because I don't think anybody thought that that record would be broken any time soon. But in Pence's case, over 4,000 of those donors were from Indiana. At the same time, John Gregg had 1,300 Indiana donors. from Indiana. And so don't give me this, all this is Washington money. And over 3,500 of those.
There is some Washington money, though.
3,500 of those were less than 100 bucks.
The Cooks put 100,000 in him, and they're not from Indiana.
That's exactly right.
But the bottom line on this, if money is the only barometer, then Mike will obviously concede that Barack Obama will be the strongest candidate because he's going to outrage.
He's not going to win Indiana. You think that Barack Obama will win Indiana?
Let's give Leslie a chance.
I do think it's important to point out that even though Mike Pence did outraise John Gregg considerably, John Gregg did not raise a tiny amount of money here.
Right.
It's not like he raised a few $100,000. I mean, he did run and
If you want to look at tiny amounts of money, look at Jim Wallace, who's opposing Mike Pence in the Republican primary.
He's got a
red number on the bottom line. And if you really want to look at tiny numbers, look at Rupert.
Yeah, 16,000.
I thought that was a little bit surprising.
That he got 16,000?
That he didn't have more. I was a little surprised. I
don't think they know how. I don't mean that as a put down.
Yeah.
I just don't think that they've engaged in that. I don't think they know how to go about doing that.
I think that, Ann's answer to the amount of money that has been raised really will be critical for John to counter that amount of money coming in, but he'll still need money to be able to get that answer out.
Governor Mitch Daniels has been chosen to deliver the official GOP response to the president's State of the Union address next week. It's fair to assume that the message in the governor's book, Keeping the Republic, Saving America by Trusting Americans, played a role in his selection. In it, the governor talked about the need to reduce the federal deficit and cut federal spending. When the book was released last September, he said he hoped it would influence the Republican presidential race. Ann Delaney, does that selection surprise you?
I think that's a real plum for Mitch Daniels to be selected to do that. I think it's funny that he's going to talk about fiscal responsibility when he finds $320 million he didn't know he had. And I seem to recall when he was budget director, he was telling us that the entire war in Iraq would cost $40 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about exploding the deficit. Yeah. He was in charge when the inmates took over the asylum.
This is a big platform.
It is a huge platform. By the way, the deficit under Obama is more in his term than all the other presidents before him collectively
in the history of the United States.
George Bush.
So
start with that. Okay.
I didn't interrupt you.
And as far as that's concerned, his selection is great because he has served two presidents. He has served 7 years in the governor's office. So he's got a lot of experience to draw on and making this speech. And this speech is important because there are going to be a lot of people watching this speech within the Republican Party to see how it does with it. Now, these things won't make you, but they can break you.
Right.
And he'll do a good job because he's a good communicator.
And there's going to be a lot of speculation that comes from this about the fact that he hasn't shut the door to a possible vice presidential
bid. It was all over Twitter this week as soon as the announcement was made about whether this is a ticket to being the vice president. I did think it was interesting to see how rarely that kind of thing actually happens.
Sure.
So it's certainly no sure thing. But, I mean, it does raise his profile. It's sort of like a little tryout, kind of thing.
You know what? I think that when they see the speech, they're going to look at the candidates that are currently in the field, and they're going to say, holy cow, what have we done? And I'm not so sure that they're going to say, oh, let's make him vice president, okay? You know, it may not make him.
He's already ruled out president, though.
Yeah, well, yeah,
and it's a little late in the process.
It's too late to qualify.
Okay, you say that. Let's see what happens. I just think that it's an interesting.
You've got to get on the ballot.
Well, you put an organization together. You don't think there are a lot of Republicans in this country who look at that group and say, we'll take anybody, but if they really if they really want to beat Barack Obama, they're going to need somebody besides those people.
Right.
And they can put together an organization in a hurry.
Well, they can't get ballot qualification in every state in a hurry. That's what their problem is.
Mobilize.
How fun this is?
Yeah.
So we're all right back to it.
They're going
to
wind up
with Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney,
both of whom are
and
a
they
disaster.
Can beat Barack Obama.
Oh, I'll bet you money.
There's
on
a lot
that
of buyer remorse in this country about Barack
not
Obama.
More.
I think there's a
that
lot of buyer remorse
the
about
way.
The candidates, too.
Yeah, finally, preparations for the Super Bowl are wrapping up here in Indianapolis, and that includes construction of a Super Bowl village. The village will include a series of zip lines, much like the ones that were in the Olympic Village in Vancouver, Canada. That's what you see here. The scaffolds supporting the zip lines will be 8 stories tall and 800 feet long. You can zip over the Super Bowl Village for $10. Mike McDaniel, are you going to buy a ticket?
My wife wants to go in the worst way, but we forgot to go online to get it. So if anybody's got one, I'm looking to buy one.
Okay.
But only one, not two, only one of them. This line ends at the Catholic Church, which I find interesting. they say they're going to have a sign up that said, if you thought that was trolling, come in and meet Jesus. So they may do a lot
Saint
of business
John's.
That week.
Yeah.
St. John's.
Yeah. Is the Super Bowl going to meet expectations for this city?
Oh, I think so. I think it'll probably exceed expectations for the city. It'll put us on a national platform, and we should handle it very well, and I think it'll be great.
Will there be right-to-work demonstrations?
There may be. You know, I mean, people feel so strongly about this, and of course, the players are with the unions on this.
They can't be that.
You think the players,
players union would do anything? I don't know whether they do anything.
Not play the game.
Actually, Demora Smith, the president of the players union, this week said they might take part in something that's legal and peaceful.
Well, I don't think anything will be illegal or not peaceful.
It's
so
hard
that's
for
good.
Me to believe that the unions could stage something that could overwhelm the Super Bowl, and the number of people who are going to be in Indianapolis.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.